Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Agenda by J. Robert Kennedy, narrated by Adam Barr. We may get to the point where the only way of saving the world will be for industrial civilization to collapse. Maurice Strong, September 1st, 1997. It is hardly possible to maintain seriously that the evil done by science is not altogether outweighed by the good. For example, if 10 million lives were lost in every war, the net effect of science would still have been to increase the average length of life. G. H. Hardy, A Mathematician's Apology, 1940. Preface. The technologies described in this book are real, and the hacks described are technically possible, many having already occurred. A recent minor example, the hacking of Dallas emergency sirens. The perfect storm described in this novel has yet to occur, but the rapid collapse of urban society is a near certainty, should it. As of 2010, over 80% of Americans live in urban centers. In these massive cities, there is nearly zero food production. All food and water are transported in. Should a nation's transportation system be compromised and its freshwater systems threatened, those within the cities could find themselves thirsty and starving within days, leaving a simple, devastating question that demands to be answered by all law-abiding citizens. When your child is starving, when your significant other runs out of their medication, and when your government appears powerless to stop those responsible, how long would it be before you took matters into your own hands and acted to save your family? 1. Bronx, New York. Larissa Williams tightly gripped the package under her jacket, desperate to look as inconspicuous as possible. A difficult task with so few people on the streets. Hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions, had already fled New York City in the aftermath of the attacks. Yet millions remained huddled in their homes, terrified to go out. Under a dusk-to-dawn curfew, most voluntarily extended it to the daylight hours for their own protection. The city was shut down. Businesses were closed. Transit was at a near standstill. And tens of thousands of cars were abandoned in the streets, paths cleared along major routes by the National Guard, using bulldozers. During the first 48 hours, there had been rioting and looting, but the Guard now had orders to shoot looters on sight, returning a frightening calm to the city. Her stomach rumbled. As a nurse, she had been deemed essential personnel, so was first in line for rations if she showed up for work. And she did. It was the right thing to do, but she didn't do it for the food. In fact, she had passed on the rations. She had plenty of food at home. Or rather, she did. Her apartment had been looted, all their food and water taken, and the babysitter murdered, leaving her three children alone until she could reach them. It had been hours since she had received the desperate call from her young son and had heard nothing since, not even from her brother, who had promised to help. And yet, that wasn't what preoccupied her thoughts. Before leaving the hospital, she had done something she felt horrible for doing, something she had never thought she could do. She had become a thief, one of the very looters she had urged shot just yesterday. All the food she had to feed her three children was now gone, and they would be starving by tomorrow. She was racked with guilt, though felt justified, albeit only slightly. She was, after all, feeding children, not herself. But what if she were caught? Would the National Guard accept her reasoning? She doubted it. She would probably be arrested, for she had taken food from the mouths of the sick and dying. Yet she had no choice. Weren't the lives of her three young children worth as much as the patients this food had been earmarked for? And many of those people were certain to die. Didn't it make more sense to feed those who could live through this crisis? The government kept promising relief, yet it never arrived. It could come tomorrow or next month. Those responsible for the catastrophe promised it never would, and right now, she believed them more than Washington. A glass bottle rolling on the pavement had her head swiveling toward the alleyway she was passing.
"What you got there, lady?"
Her heart slammed as footfalls echoed. She ran. Part of her didn't want to look behind her, the prospect of seeing whoever was chasing her more terrifying than not knowing. She spotted a National Guard unit ahead at the next intersection, at least a dozen armed men who were there to protect her. Yet she was a thief, breaking the law. Would they shoot her for looting? And if they did, who would take care of her children? She glanced behind her, finding herself alone. One of the soldiers walked toward her, tapping his watch.
5 minutes, ma'am. I'm almost home.
He smiled at her, returning to his post. She dared not get any closer, the bulge in her jacket too obvious. She took a chance. She dashed down an alleyway, a foolish venture, yet she had little choice. Somebody grumbled from between two dumpsters, yet she pressed on as fast as she could. She could see the street ahead, her apartment building on the other side, when two men stepped in front of her, blocking her path.
"What's the hurry?"
She cried out, struggling to push through, but it was useless. They grabbed her arms, and the food she had managed to conceal for so long fell to the ground.
"Holy shit!"
The two men scrambled for the loot, and she took advantage. She raced past them, bursting out onto the street, tears streaking her face as she rushed for the doors of her building, a siren wailing a warning of the impending curfew, leaving her to wonder where the next meal for her children would come from. Tonight, she had failed her family, her helpless children, and soon they would be sick enough to join those in the hospitals, too weak to go on, if they were still alive. She unlocked the door to her apartment building, stepping inside and pulling it shut, feeling safer, though not safe. For in today's America, friends and neighbors were no more. No one could be trusted. The country was collapsing, and the government was powerless to stop it. She had stolen food from the dying, then had it stolen from her. And tomorrow, God willing, she would do it all over, for there was no one left to help her. She was on her own. 2. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. 3 days earlier. CIA Operations Officer Dylan Kane sprinted as hard as he could, a grin on his face, the hormones pulsing through his system giving him a natural high that usually only vigorous sex with a beautiful woman could provide, though that was frowned upon on the streets of Philadelphia. He glanced over his shoulder to see the only woman he had ever loved keeping pace, less than 10 feet behind him, taking advantage of the slight delays he encountered as he threaded his way through the crowds of pedestrians. Li Fong had changed his life in ways he could never have thought possible. He was madly in love with the former Chinese Special Forces soldier, the brave woman having chosen what was right over what was safe, forced to betray her country in order to save it. She now lived her life in exile in the United States, a grateful American government providing her with a pension and strict conditions that were driving her crazy. She was a doer, a woman of action, with skills that would make most men envious. Yet she was forbidden from using any of them, lest it attract attention. The Chinese had been quiet so far. No sabers rattled, insisting she be returned. And if she kept a low profile, along with a shut mouth, they would probably leave it that way, though it meant never returning home, never holding down a fulfilling job, and lying to any friends she might make. But with him, it was different. He had been the one who had extracted her, who had saved her life. So she knew exactly who he was and what he did, and he her. It meant they could be open with each other. No secrets beyond operational. They could be themselves, like right now. Two highly competitive athletes sprinting all out in the streets of Philly without for a moment a care in the world. His career as a spy, a member of the CIA's Special Activities Division of the Special Operations Group, had been one of quiet distinction. A solitary life with few friends and a family left in the dark. His relationship with his father estranged because of it. His cover story as an insurance investigator for Shaw's of London had never sat well with his father, especially after blindsiding him with the announcement he had left the military, a profession for which his father had tremendous respect. It had been a betrayal, never forgiven, and a sore spot at every rare family gathering, no matter how desperately his mother tried to keep the peace. But that lonely life had changed when he had met Fong, though not immediately. She was a job, a package to deliver. Yet he had felt sorry for her, understanding her isolation, and that had led to an unexpected friendship that had quickly blossomed into much more. He loved her. He had even told her so. He had told plenty of women he loved them over the years, his marks sometimes needing those words before they spilled their secrets or offered up their bodies for clandestinely taken compromising photos. But this had been the first time he had meant it. Yet he was tormented. Tormented by a secret eating away at him, a secret he could never share without shattering the heart of the woman he loved. Somebody dropped on the sidewalk ahead of them, a crowd quickly gathering. Kane eased up and pushed through the crowd, an Asian man gripping his chest.
"I think he's having a heart attack."
Kane looked about. "Is there a doctor here?" Two black SUVs skidded to a halt only feet away. Asian men, Chinese, pouring out.
"Ah, shit."
He stepped back when the man on the ground suddenly grabbed him by the leg. Kane delivered several quick blows to the man's throat, leaving him choking for air, when Fong cried out. He glanced over his shoulder to see two men hauling her toward the open door of one of the vehicles. Kane reached for his gun, finding none. He had left it at Fong's apartment. This was supposed to be a jog, one she took every day alone, one he took every day with her when visiting. He frowned. That's how they knew where we'd be. Apparently, the Chinese had been searching for her the entire time, and now they had her. Not if I can help it. He spotted a shoulder holster on the decoy and yanked the weapon, rolling to his side, then popping up on a knee. He squeezed off two quick rounds, dropping one of the men holding Fong, then fired two more, eliminating the other. Fong grabbed their weapons, blasting double-barreled at the targets to her right, as Kane continued to fire at those on her left. Six were down, another six remaining, when something hit him, and every muscle in his body seized. He dropped to his knees, the sensation overwhelming, a sensation he had experienced in training and real life. Somebody had tased him. He collapsed to the ground, his entire body shaking, his muscles tensed to the point of exhaustion, and out of the corner of his eye, he saw the decoy holding the device with one hand, his heavily bruised throat with the other. Fong cried out, rushing toward him when she, too, was tased from within one of the vehicles. She tumbled forward, smacking her head hard on the pavement. Kane reached for her but couldn't, incapacitated by the 50,000 volts coursing through his body. The surviving attackers grabbed her and hauled her inside the lead SUV, its tires chirping as it sped away, the other quickly following. Kane felt hands on him as onlookers, cowering moments ago, rushed to his aid.
"Get me up," he moaned, and he was hauled to his feet.
He stumbled into the roadway, staring at the vehicles as he struggled to regain control of his muscles. A motorcycle engine whined behind him, and he turned, sticking out an arm and clotheslining the unfortunate rider. His shoulder almost dislocated as the Kawasaki careened out of control before falling on its side and skidding 50 feet.
"Sorry, buddy."
He stumbled over and picked up the bike, climbing on and restarting it. He glanced in his side mirror and saw the crowds that had helped him now helping the new victim. He'll live. He gunned it, the front tire popping off the pavement for a few seconds as he attempted to close the gap, when his eyes narrowed at the sight before him. He could see the SUVs in the distance, blasting through every intersection, the lights green the entire way ahead of them, and as they cleared, turning red. This is way too well coordinated. He pulled his phone from his armband and speed-dialed one of the few friends he had in the world, and the only person he could think of that might be able to help. 3. LaRue White Residence, Fairfax Towers, Falls Church, Virginia. CIA analyst supervisor Chris LaRue moaned in ecstasy as he leaned back in the tub, hot water enveloping his body, bubbles up past his chin. But all of that had been forgotten as his girlfriend, CIA operations officer Sherry White, sitting at the opposite end of the tub, worked her magic with her toes. It was exquisitely dirty, and as his eyes rolled back, he gasped out a warning that only encouraged her further. His phone rang.
Oh, God, don't stop.
She didn't, though she did offer commentary.
That's Dylan's ringtone, isn't it? Tomorrow I'm bringing some equipment from the office to sweep this place. There's no way it's just a coincidence. Every time we get in this tub together, he calls. Oh, God. Yes. Is that a yes to sweeping the apartment or something else?
He sighed, his tension relieved, then gave her a look.
Yes to both.
He reached for his phone and swiped a wet thumb across the screen.
Hello?
Hey, buddy, it's me. I need your help. LaRue recognized the urgency in his friend's voice and immediately began his one-handed struggle from the slippery tub, Sherry becoming all business, her lithe, highly trained form leaping clear and offering a hand.
Somebody just kidnapped Fong. I need eyes and I need them now. Just a sec.
He placed the call on speaker.
I'm at home with Sherry. You're on speaker.
He glanced at her as she quickly towed his hands and arms dry, then her own.
Fong has been kidnapped. Call my team,
he whispered, then raised his voice as he headed naked for the living room, a trail of bubble bath and water behind him. Sherry dialed her phone as he logged into his laptop.
Where are you?
I'm in Philly. I've lost sight of them, but I think they're hacking the traffic signals. They were getting greens, and I kept getting reds. Kane's voice was strained, occasionally punctuated with the loud whine of what sounded like a motorcycle engine. Sherry stepped away slightly.
Hi, Sonia. It's Sherry White. Hold for Chris.
She sat beside him and pressed the phone to his ear so he could speak to one of his analysts, Sonia Tong.
Sonia, it's me. Assemble the team. I need access to the traffic cameras in Philly. Lock on to Dylan Kane's cell phone and look for a hack of the system and... Wait.
He leaned toward his phone, sitting on the living room table beside his laptop.
Dylan, what are we looking for?
2 black SUVs. Ford Expeditions. I've got a plate on the second vehicle. Sherry held her phone close to LaRue's as Kane read off the plate, then pressed it back against his ear.
Sonia, did you get that?
Yes, sir. Just a second.
The voice of Randy Child, one of his young hotshot analysts, jacked in.
Sir, it's Randy. I'm seeing your hack. Looks like they're just taking a straight shot east.
Can you give him some help on the lights?
Just a sec.
Keys tapped, then Kane laughed.
Awesome. I've got greens.
Child cut in.
He's got green lights, but I can't stop the hostiles. He might be able to catch up, though.
You can't get them reds?
No. They're in the system deeper than I am, but they seem to be just setting and forgetting them once they're past. They're heading somewhere in a hurry, and they seem to just want to get there first.
LaRue exhaled loudly.
Any guesses?
Tong replied.
They're heading for the Delaware by the looks of it.
Child cursed.
If they get there, they can put her on a boat, and we'll never find her.
LaRue exchanged a concerned look with Sherry.
We need eyes in the sky.
Tong was way ahead of him.
Sir, I've got someone on a motorcycle and 2 black SUVs on camera. Patching the feeds to you now.
LaRue's screen changed to show a map with 3 pulsing dots. He smiled.
Dylan, you're gaining fast.
You should be on them any second now.
I see them.
Sonia, send local PD and notify the local FBI office. He's going to need backup.
Roger that. Already on with local PD now. They're dispatching units.
Child cut in.
FBI has been notified. Good. Dylan, are you armed?
Affirmative. LaRue pointed at Sherry.
Get me the director.
Sherry grabbed the landline and quickly dialed.
This is Officer Sherry White for Director Morrison. We've got an urgent situation. Authentication code Niner Alpha Charlie Echo 4.
She waited, her finger tapping her naked thigh, when Kane cursed.
Make sure you keep those locals out of my way.
LaRue saw the problem. Local police cruisers now chasing Kane, two cutting in front of him from side streets.
Sonia, deal with it.
Yes, sir.
Kane gunned his motorcycle and threaded it between the two cruisers.
I've got the director.
Sherry pressed the handset against LaRue's free ear.
Sir, this is LaRue. I've got Dylan on the other line. Someone has just kidnapped Lee Fong, and he's in pursuit. I need clearance for him to take action.
Where is he?
Philadelphia. He's in pursuit of two black SUVs, one with Lee aboard.
Locals?
Also in pursuit, though at the moment they think Kane is a suspect.
Let the locals handle it. We can't have one of our own killing people on the streets of Philadelphia.
Sir.
Tell him that's an order, directly from me.
LaRue closed his eyes.
Okay. Dylan, the director says to stand down and let the locals handle it.
You tell him to go fu-
There was a burst of static as the motorcycle engine overwhelmed Kane's voice. Himself. Morrison's voice rose slightly.
What did he say?
LaRue wasn't sure what to do. He didn't agree with Morrison's order, yet the director was right, technically. The problem was he was ignoring who Kane was. There was no way he would stand down, not when Fong was involved.
Don't think he heard me, sir. He's on a motorcycle doing over 60 on city streets.
Sherry pointed at the screen, the three dots almost converging.
Sir, he's about to engage them. I need a go or no go.
Morrison cursed.
Tell him he's cleared to engage. Have him identify himself as a Homeland agent without his ID. I'll get the identity live by the time they run it.
LaRue grinned.
Thank you, sir.
He leaned toward his cell phone.
Dylan, you're cleared. You're now Homeland if asked.
Copy that. Engaging now.
4. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Kane drew the liberated Type 92 5.8mm semi-automatic pistol from his belt and took aim, squeezing off two rounds into the front tire of the second vehicle. It swerved hard to the right, hitting the curb and flipping on its side before sliding into a gas station. He ducked as it erupted into a fireball, cringing as he silently prayed any civilians were able to get clear. A quick glance in his rearview mirror showed the road behind him cut off, the police in pursuit now blocked. He was alone, which was the way he liked it. He closed the gap on the remaining SUV Fong had been hauled into. Somebody leaned out the passenger side window, a JS 9mm submachine gun belching lead at him. He leaned to the left, the bullets tearing at the asphalt, then fired two rounds into the rear tire, allowing the driver at least some control. They careened to a halt and Kane braked hard, coming up directly behind it, the vehicle itself providing him with cover. He leaned to the right, squeezing off a single round, nailing the passenger in the side of the head as he foolishly stepped out. Kane surged forward, the passenger door now open, and put two in the driver. He stepped up and aimed into the rear, finding only Fong, bound and gagged. He leaned forward and snapped the zip ties with a jerk of the blade hidden in his keychain, then yanked the gag free.
You okay?
Yes.
Then let's get the hell out of here.
Fong hopped out of the rear door and Kane stepped down, quickly surveying the area for new arrivals. Flashing lights were quickly approaching, the police having made it past the fireball roadblock. He turned to Fong.
I'm with Homeland Security, if anyone asks. Special Agent Dylan Kane. I don't have my ID. It's back at the apartment.
What if they ask to see it?
It'll be there by the time we get back. Don't worry.
A chopper thundered overhead, and he looked up, shielding his eyes from the sunlight behind the silhouette. Police? It finally came into focus. A black civilian chopper with a large dome mounted on the side, aimed directly at them. A crushing, ear-splitting, screeching sound erupted, overwhelming his senses. He squeezed his eyes shut, grabbing at his ears as the air sucked out of his lungs. Fong cried out beside him, dropping to the ground in agony. He raised the weapon to fire, but it meant uncovering an ear, the excruciating pain too much, forcing him to drop the gun and press as hard as he could against his ears as he collapsed to his knees. The chopper landed, and between forced blinks, he saw several men with ear protection jump out. They grabbed Fong and hauled her inside, another man walking over to him and bending down. He shouted something at him, but between clenching his eyes shut and jamming his palms into his ears, he could hear nothing, and only lip-read the last word. Eternal. The man rose and climbed into the chopper. It lifted off, the incredible din finally subsiding as it banked away. Kane picked up the gun, but it was no use. They were gone. She was gone. And he had failed. 5. LaRue White Residence, Fairfax Towers, Falls Church, Virginia.
What the hell was that?
Chris LaRue stared at his laptop screen, watching as the helicopter took off, the camera feeds returning after momentarily experiencing major interference.
I don't know, replied Sonia Tong. Where's that chopper heading?
East.
Okay, track it. I'm coming in.
Yes, sir.
Sherry hung up the landline, the director apparently ending the conversation. She disappeared into the bedroom.
Dylan, can you hear me?
There was no reply, but he could see from the footage that Kane was alive. He finally responded.
Hey, buddy. They got her.
There was a burst of static.
The bastards got her. Please tell me you're tracking that chopper.
We are. It's heading east. I'll have a destination for you shortly.
Okay. I'll wait for your call.
I'm heading to Langley now. Remember your cover.
Yeah. Looks like I'm about to use it. I'll call you back in a few.
Kane's voice was replaced by shouts as local police surrounded him, dozens of weapons pointed at him. The call went dead as Sherry reemerged, clothed, carrying an armful for him.
I'll come in with you, just in case there's something I can do. Okay.
LaRue turned his attention to the last call he was connected to.
Sonia, I'll be in shortly. Keep me posted if anything happens. Will do.
He ended the call, then quickly tailed off before slipping on his underwear. He sat, awkwardly catching the pair of rolled-up socks Sherry tossed him, batting them about several times before finally snagging them.
I'm definitely not a sports guy. It's gotta be the Chinese.
Sherry handed him a shirt.
They were after her, not him. He wasn't even a target. Otherwise, they would have shot him when they took her.
LaRue agreed.
They've clearly been looking for her since she defected, so it makes sense. They don't like loose ends, especially loose ends that know state secrets.
He stepped into the bathroom, applied antiperspirant, then a spray of Yves Saint Laurent cologne. Sherry leaned in and inhaled deeply.
Love that stuff.
He eyed her in the mirror as he buttoned up his shirt.
Don't get any ideas.
She patted his package.
I know. Business time.
LaRue pulled his pants on and stuffed his shirt tails inside.
Belt?
Sherry disappeared, then returned a moment later with one as he zipped his pants. He quickly fed the belt through the loops as his phone rang. Sherry put it on speaker for him.
Sir, it's Sonia. We've got a destination on the chopper. It landed on the roof of Temple University Hospital.
LaRue's eyebrows rose as he buckled his belt.
Okay, send the locals to that address immediately, and make sure Kane knows. They're already on their way, sir, and I've texted the destination to Kane's phone.
LaRue headed for the door to their apartment.
Good work. I'm about to leave. ETA 20 minutes.
He stuffed his feet into his shoes, leaning over to pull them on, the laces still tied from last night. Sherry opened the door and gasped as two men stepped inside, one holding a gun, the other something in his hand. A spraying sound was followed by a fine mist aimed at Sherry's face. She collapsed without a sound. The spray turned on LaRue. He spun, but too late, quickly fading, the world closing in around him as whatever he had inhaled took effect. Someone stepped beside him, and a voice said something in his ear, though what it was, he had no clue.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?